AM 570 KLAC, 98.7 KYSR, HD2.
Los Angeles.
Available anywhere using the iHeartRadio app. AM 570, an LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peete.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney Peete.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
All right, let's go. Fred Rogan, Rodney Peete on AM570 LA Sports. Rodney, shooter's choice. You get to pick. The question, who was worse last night? Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the Rams, Fred.
Okay. Let's start with the Rams. If you want to start with the Rams, then I have something to say to you before we even get into this. And I'm not only going to speak on my behalf, I'm going to speak on the behalf of someone else as well. That individual is Kevin Figgers. I will speak on Kevin's behalf as well. We do not need to be included in your dispute with Rob Parker. We don't need to be involved in that. And I thought last night when it started, I tried to button it up quickly so it would go away. I did. whatever. And I thought that would pretty much end it. It went on for like an hour. So could you please keep your fight with Rob Parker to yourself?
I will say, hey, by the way, Rodney, before you respond, Fred does not speak for me because I was thoroughly entertained. So I say, by all means, keep it coming. I might not say anything, but as an observer.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we all know Rob Parker. He's... I don't want to call him an L.A. hater.
No.
He's an L.A. agitator.
Okay.
Whether it be Dodgers, Lakers, Rams, he's an agitator a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's the city of angels. We have everything out here. So he feels it's his duty to kind of bring L.A. down from the clouds, I guess. That's his role. As we know from when our listeners call in and talk to Rob Parker, we know that. So as soon as the Rams got behind, you know, it started. And it's not my fault. He used a string that we all use together sometimes, and he didn't start a new string with just me. He included you guys on that existing string. So I apologize for that. But, yeah, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming once the Rams start falling behind. What was his first one? How is your Messiah now?
I think that floored me. I was done at that. Where's your Messiah now? After the first interception.
Yeah. No, you knew it was coming all game. And I thoroughly, as you guys saw, I thoroughly thought, okay, this is a bad start for the Rams. They'll get it going. San Francisco's, they played poorly. They haven't won a game at home. They just looked bad all season long. And Garoppolo on the verge of getting benched, and just, you know, Rams coming off a beatdown that they had against Tennessee, so they'll be all right. They'll come back in this game, and it didn't turn around for the Rams. I can't remember. It was as bad a beatdown in the Sean McVay era that I've seen. You know, other than maybe that when Tampa Bay came to town and beat them up in the Coliseum that one year with Jameis Winston threw all over him. But this one was more, I think, gut-punching because the Rams have so much more expectations and the talent level on the Rams, and everybody, you know, predicted them going to the Super Bowl and all those things. And for 2 weeks in a row, Fred, they have been taken out to the woodshed and beat down physically. I mean, physically beat down. Tennessee beat them up, and it wasn't even close. And then last night, from the first series on, it was like San Francisco said, okay, you're about to be in an old-school 15-round bout. Let's go. I'm starting to punch, waiting for you guys to punch back. And the Rams had very little punch back to them all night long. And it was a physical game, which brings into question, you know, and you know, Eric, we had him on yesterday, and he talks about this all the time. There still is, in the NFL and in football, there still has to be a level of physicality. You have to be physical. You can play 7-on-7 video game football all you want, but at the end of the day, you still at some point have to show how physical you are. And San Francisco last night was the more physical team, and it was evident, and it wasn't even close. It was scary how much they ran the ball down the Rams' throat, and then on offense, how much they limited the Rams to what they were able to do.
Two games in a row. I mean, Tennessee, you say, okay, Tennessee's very good, and we know they're a physical club. But then you go up there, and the exact same thing happens two times in a row. You've got to hope that's not a trend, but how does that happen two times in a row?
Yeah, it's you really got to inspect it, because you can write one off and say, oh, that's not us. And I think that's what Sean McVay said after Tennessee. Well, that's not us. That wasn't really us tonight. We were bad, and Stafford was really bad in the Tennessee game, made some bad throws and bad interceptions. And I put that, most of that on him, because he gave up basically 14 points by himself. Last night, the throw to Higbee that ended up in a pick six, that's not his fault. I mean, it goes on the quarterback as a pick six and an interception, but that's not his fault. But
you mean the one through his hands?
Yeah, one through his hands that bounced and they got it and ran it in. That's a completion. As a team, though, they were out of sync. You know, we never see Cooper Kupp drop balls, and he dropped balls last night. Higbee doesn't normally drop balls. He dropped not only that one that went for a pick six, but he dropped some other ones in the game. You know, playing with the new OBJ, I think they were out of sync on that first interception where Stafford thought he was doing something. OBJ stopped, and then it was an easy interception for San Francisco. But I really believe sometimes when you lose a guy that is more valuable than you think, or more valuable than people realize, like a Robert Woods, and does so many things for you, it has a big impact on the offense and a big impact on the guy pulling the trigger, because no longer do you have your comfort blanket. No longer, yes, everybody believes Cooper Kupp is the guy, and he is leading the NFL in so many categories, and he is that go-to guy, but he's nothing without Robert Woods on the other side doing what he does to free up Cooper Kupp. And it's going to take some time for OBJ to fill into that role, but they found out last night how valuable Robert Woods is to this offense.
Yeah, and for the second week in a row, Matt Stafford looks human. Now, you pointed out, and during the game last night, as the text chain continued, that the OBJ interception, well, that wasn't really on Stafford, right? The Higbee interception, that wasn't really on Stafford either. Yeah. And the dropped balls, and as you pointed out, there were a number of them, right through guys' hands. You can't really blame Stafford for that. But if you're just watching the game, you're going...
Yeah, he wasn't sharp either. Yeah.
And Stafford wasn't sharp.
Right.
If you're watching the game, what are you thinking? What's wrong with Stafford?
Right.
Why are these guys dropping the ball? Well, it's right in their hands, half of them.
Yeah.
Why'd that get picked off? Well, he stopped running. Maybe that was the problem. But that's not what the average fan thinks. They go, what's wrong with Stafford?
Correct. And why'd you get him? And he's supposed to do this and supposed to do that, a la Rob Parker, if you're listening. But no, it wasn't it wasn't solely on him. But if you watch that game as well, he wasn't the sharp Matthew Stafford. And the little things that I'm talking about is, even though there were several balls and that guys should have caught, including Cooper Kupp, but they weren't normally the accuracy balls that Stafford would throw. A couple of them were behind Cooper Kupp. Now, he should catch them, but that's not when Stafford is sharp. When he's sharp, balls are on the money, hits guys in stride. They're able to run after the catch. They're not behind him. They're not having to make an awkward catch. And last night, there were a number of throws that were either high or behind guys, which tells me that San Francisco really made him uncomfortable, or there was he's something going on with him in the last couple of weeks, because he hasn't been very accurate and he hasn't been very sharp.
Rodney, let's just talk about the physicality, because they were beat up, and you summed it up very well. They were taken out to the woodshed two times in a row. I don't know in the NFL how you tell guys you got to show up and be more physical. That's kind of your job, and you know that. And in the Tennessee game, I actually thought Sean McVay was outcoached. I just thought he was. Was he outcoached last night too?
Yep. Yeah, I think so. At some point, we often talk about this on our NFL Mondays, is that you know, at some point you got to go, this ain't working. You know, at some point you got to start, okay, whatever we thought going into this game, it ain't working tonight, and we got to change it up. And I mean this offensively and defensively. It was amazing how easy San Francisco ran the football on the Rams when everybody in the building know they were going to run the football and pound the football, and the Rams could not stop them. They didn't change up. They played more coverage. They did certain things. And let's give it up to San Francisco. They played the best game of their season, too. Garoppolo played the best game of his season. That offensive line played the best game. They were ready for the Rams, and I don't know if it's because of the rivals, but for whatever reason, Shanahan has McVay's number. They won the last five, I believe, against the Rams. So he has McVay's number. But there was it didn't feel like there was any adjustments that to what they were doing. And offensively, you know, as much of an offensive innovator as Sean McVay is, and again, can't put it all on him because guys did drop some balls in key situations on third downs and stuff. But there was not really a whole lot of adjustments that they were making. Even in the Tennessee game, as they were getting pummeled up front on their pass rush, you heard, you know, even Collinsworth was saying, they got to change it up, go back to doing some things, moving Stafford around the pocket because he's a sitting duck back there and they're just coming after and teeing off. Well, similar thing happened last night. They were getting pressure on him and they weren't changing things up. And it felt like it was continuously all game long. And then defensively, what did they do? They didn't really adjust to what San Francisco was doing. You know, if I'm them, I'm trying to say, okay, Jimmy G's a steady manager of the game. Let's make him beat us. At some point, you can't allow them to run. I don't know what they ran for. I think I got to believe it was over 200 yards they ran for last night. But they ran the ball down the Rams' throat for four quarters. And at some point, you got to change it up. You got to play eight-man front. You got to bring guys up and say, okay, we'll play man-to-man. If you're going to beat us with your receivers over the top, you beat us. But we're not going to let you run the ball. You got to take something away. And that's what makes Bill Belichick so good, is that no matter what you do and what you do well, he's going to take something away to make you beat him in some way that is not your strength. And the Rams never did that to San Francisco.
49ers rushed for 156 yards last night. So, I think it's safe to say this bye could not have come at a better time for the Rams. Give everybody a chance to shake out the cobwebs, figure out what's going on. If you're a Rams fan, are you concerned now?
I think you got to be concerned. You have to be concerned with... I think the offense and Stafford will come around, but I think the concerning part is... coming off of last year, knowing how great that defense was, which is the whole reason they felt the sense of urgency, is that we have the number one defense in the NFL and been in the top five in the last 3 years with Aaron Donald and the guys we have, Jalen Ramsey on the back end, that we offensively, we got to be on par with that and we got to be able to score some points and take advantage of that. But I don't think people thought that teams would be able to move the ball up and down the field on the Rams defense like they have been this season, and not only just Tennessee and San Francisco last night, but remember Arizona came in and beat them up and just went up and down the field on that defense as well. So there's some issues on that side of the ball. Bring back Wade Phillips.
Yeah, well, or Brandon Staley, because Raheem Morris, you know, as we watched the early part of the season, the Rams were giving up a lot of points. They were scoring a lot of points,
yeah,
but giving up a lot of points. And people are going, man, that Rams defense, wow. I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're giving up 25, 30 points a game? And wow, maybe that's defense in the NFL today. But all of a sudden, you know, what gets you there dooms you, and they're still giving up points, and they're getting physically beaten. And is it Raheem Morris?
You know, I don't know if it's scheme or not, because you look at it, they got the same... basically the same core of guys. Now, they've lost some guys here and there, but they've replaced them with some really good players. So it'd be interesting to see how much of the same scheme that they ran, they're running now, as to what they ran with Brandon Staley last year or even Wade Phillips the year before. So it'll be interesting if he changed things around or will they change. Or is it just a matter of players not being able to do what they thought they could do?
Okay, we'll talk more about the Rams later. So I gave you two choices, Lakers or Rams. You picked Rams. Now we'll go to the Lakers. And That was just painful. That was painful. That beating was as bad as the beating the 49ers gave to the Rams, that the Bulls gave to the Lakers last night.
Yeah.
Well, Lonzo Ball, I mean, you know Lonzo.
Zoe was matching with a jump shot.
Yeah, he was last
night. Yeah, I was wondering how you were going to be, Kevin. I was wondering last night how Fred was going to be today.
Oh, yeah.
On Lonzo, since he has been the, I want to say the biggest hater of Lonzo. Lonzo.
I don't think it's that strong, Fred.
Yeah. Strong. Too strong.
You never thought he could play. You never thought he was good enough. All those things, Fred. The kid has had an unbelievable season so far, and he came back to town and put it on the Lakers. I'm talking about, you just played the drop of Zoe's magic with a jump shot. He had that jump shot working last night, didn't he?
Oh, hell did.
That when he hit falling out of bounds along the baseline. It's like, oh, whoa, Lonzo.
Where was that Lonzo in L.A.? Where did that come from?
Yeah, he looked good. LaVine looked really good for them.
Yeah, and DeMar DeRozan, I said it before, and I'll say it again.
Yeah, he did.
Just a steady baller. That's all I can say about him. It's just sometimes we talk about guys in baseball, the Chris Taylors, Corey Seagers, they just play ball. They just ball. They every night they're going to give it to you. They're going to give you something good. DeMar DeRozan is just, for his whole career, he's just done nothing but give you buckets, give you effort, and is probably the most underrated, unsung star in the NBA of what he's done, including his body of work. But unlike the Rams, where I feel the Rams can, turn it around, get it on a roll, they win a game. No, they got a tough one because the Rams got to go to Green Bay after the bye.
Yeah,
that'll be an interesting test. But I think they can turn it around. It's beginning to feel like, I don't know, because the way the Lakers are losing, how are they losing? They're losing to teams that are younger, faster, more athletic, and they don't seem like they can catch up to the teams that they're playing and the teams that are going to be in this mix down the stretch. And that, I don't know how you overcome that, later in the season, because physically they can't keep up with the teams that they're playing. I mean, it looked like, looked like the Bulls were running circles around the Lakers and athletic. And we saw that when with Phoenix. We saw that with a few other teams that came into town, that just the Lakers looked very slow when it came to facing some of the other teams in the league.
Yeah, last night watching that game, you wished your team was the Bulls. You wished all the Bulls were playing for the Lakers. That's the team you wanted last night, not the Lakers, because Chicago is young. They do move. They are athletic. The Lakers were getting beat down the court, beat to spots. They were pounding the ball inside Chicago, scoring. Lakers looked out of sync. It's too early to be tired, but they didn't look like they had a lot of energy. It was bad. It was an ugly look.
Yeah.
And if that is an indication of things to come, they've got huge problems. And this is what happens, win or lose. Could turn around. They could win the NBA title. When every game's starting Friday, when I think LeBron's supposed to be back. Could do it. Okay. Win or lose, this is on LeBron. This is his masterstroke. This is his plan. Rob Pelinka executed the plan. LeBron, Rich Paul, this is what we need to win. And Rob Pelinka said, well, okay, we'll go get him. And let's go get him. You got him? Let's go get him.
Right.
And
so but here's the thing on that, and I agree with you, because obviously, he'll never say it, but certainly LeBron had his fingerprints on the construction of this team since he got here, right? So it definitely is a situation. We constantly mention the Buddy Hield situation versus Russell Westbrook and what that would have looked like, and probably was a better fit. But if you're Rob Pelinka and Kurt Rambis and Genie and those guys, and you're looking up and go, okay, LeBron came in and said, can't play with these young guys. Let's get them all. Let's ship them all out of town. The Brandon Ingrams, Alonzo Balls. Let's get rid of them. We'll keep Kuzma, but everybody else got to go. And they turn around and they win a title. They say, well, give me Rondo, right? Bring in J.R. Smith. Bring in some of these other, Dwight Howard, right? Come on. That's how we're going to win it. And a healthy AD, this is how we're going to win it. And they won it. So his credibility obviously is through the roof because he said, okay, this is what I think I need to win it. And he does it again and said, this is what I need to win it. How do you not say, okay?
You know, there's a difference between, and somebody told me this morning, and I found it really interesting.
Well, before you answer that, but when they did that construction, they shipped off all the young guys, and they brought in guys like Rondo, and they had Dwight Howard. There was a lot of skepticism of whether they could win it with that group, right?
Right. Here's the thing. They could not have won it with the young group they had as constructed then. They needed to make changes, okay? And they made changes, and it worked. There's a difference between product and process, and I learned this morning. As a guy that played, you might have heard this. Product is the result. We won. We won the title. That's the product. We won. The process getting there is very different. And when you do something and it's working, you don't oftentimes look at the process. So when you go out and say, okay, it worked. We've got to go again here. Let's get Russell Westbrook. And basically we pay three guys and whoever else we can get. And that's going to be our team. Because the approach worked. So they did it again. Now we'll find out if it works again. In the NBA, how many times do we have to say it? You're either really good or really bad. That's good both ways. If you're really good, you're in the conversation. If you're really bad, you can start rebuilding to get good. If you're in the middle, you're in no man's land. It doesn't matter why play. Your fans will show up. You're not going to be in the playoffs. If you are, you'll get knocked out in the first round. The owner will make money. So the Lakers are going for it. I respect that. I get it. And again, this is all coming down to, is he right or wrong? You know, my problem with what they did, you cannot keep extending LeBron. He's missed, what, 9-10 games already? And you go, well, it's early. That's not the point. He's missing games. He's already hurt. He's been hurt every year. He's already hurt. And every game he doesn't play is a game that they should not be favored to win because they have to have him because that's how the team is constructed. You know, his big appearance last night came when Anthony Davis was ejected for trying to tie his shoe. He tried to tie his shoe. The play was continuing. He turns over, yells at the referee, that's BS or whatever he said. Anthony Davis gets ejected. LeBron walked onto the court. Now LeBron's on the court. What he's going to do, I don't know. In theory, according to rule, he should have been ejected because you're not supposed to leave the bench. But then he's standing
there. You eject LeBron, Fred.
I would eject him. If somebody from the Bulls bench ran on the court, what would happen? You're gone. Boom. Thank you for playing. You don't walk out here. And he didn't do anything, but he just walked out there. That's what he's doing. That is his contribution now. His contribution is talking to the coaches, talking to the officials, and walking on the court. You go, but he's hurt. I know he's hurt. I understand that. But he's the reason this is built this way. It's built for him. And if you continue to go, well, we've got LeBron, yeah, but if he's not playing enough and you're in trouble or the pieces don't work, then it's a failure. On the other hand, maybe it works. Then it's a success.
By the way, talking about pieces not working, do you guys happen to know who the top seed in the Eastern Conference is right now at 10-3? Just a wild guess. Got one for me, Fred?
Chicago Bulls.
Bulls.
It is the Washington Wizards.
Oh, okay.
With Laker cast-offs, Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Montrezl Harrell balling their asses off.
Yeah,
and what
are,
people would say at the end of last season, why did the Lakers lose? It wasn't because their offseason moves last year to fortify the roster with guys like Harrell and Schroeder didn't work. It was because AD and LeBron were injured. And was it really necessary to blow up the entire roster to bring in someone who was not a good fit next to LeBron? I mean, a lot of people said it at the time. They were going to end up regretting doing it. Now, again, to your point, Fred, it's still early in the season.
It could
work. Who knows? It could work. But the trends are, at this moment in time, you probably would have just been better off running the band back from last year and just hoping that LeBron and AD were to stay healthy. Because if they were healthy, the Phoenix Suns would not have been in the NBA Finals last year. You can find anybody that would argue against that.
That's fair.
The way the Lakers roster was constructed last year, is better than this team this year. I don't know how you can argue against that.
How many more years does LeBron have on his deal? Two?
I believe two more.
Okay, and they're already talking about extending him.
I have not seen that, but all right.
All right. They shouldn't have extended him this two.
Why?
Why? Because you were going to hit diminishing returns, and three guys are chewing up too much of the cap. Three guys.
You don't extend him. What do you do? What do you do? What do you do, Fred?
You play him out?
Diminishing returns for LeBron, when healthy, he's still better than 90% of the league.
Okay.
So
his numbers are still great this year when he's healthy.
Yeah, exactly. But,
you can't pay him what you paid him.
You can't foresee that he's going to, miss the, and we don't still know. I mean, after, and we could look up in May, and this may be the only time that he misses. So, you can't make that. Can't make that determination now. The problem Lakers have is that they're so top heavy that when LeBron or AD, even just one of them, not just both of them, but when one of them is off the court, the drop off is so drastic that they can't recover from it.
And they thought Russell Westbrook.
That's the problem.
They thought Russell Westbrook would be the guy to make that up.
Yeah,
he can make that up if he came off the bench. We know that's not going to happen.
But that's what they believe. Yeah. Okay. If we lose one of the two big guys, we'll get Russ. We know how good he is. Now we still have two real good guys. But one of the two good guys, if it's Russ, doesn't really play well with anybody else. He plays well by himself. He's exciting, but he doesn't play well with anybody else. He leaves Washington. They're in first place in the East. Think about that. And then he comes here, and it's kind of like it was. Every stop he's been.
Yeah.
I think they've got a real problem, Rodney.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I don't see, and unfortunately, like you, we just were talking about, Father Time gets to everybody. There's no, LeBron has not been this hurt in the last 3 years. Like in his whole career, he hasn't been hurt like this. So it's happening, and there's no getting around it. You have to kind of hold your breath when he's playing for a stretch of time of, oh my God, when is it going to happen again where he's going to miss four or five games? And can you withstand that? And then when is Anthony Davis's turn to go down? Because, the way he plays and plays all out and he plays hard, don't get me wrong, but I've never seen a big guy fall on the floor and be on the floor as much as Anthony Davis is. And he gets those little bumps and bruises and those nicks and things like that that can keep him out two or three games. And they're not equipped to handle it when one of those guys are down and be really a force. And that is a big issue.
LeBron James is up after next season, by the way, as is Russell Westbrook, who has a player option for next year. But something tells me he's not going to decline $47 million. So you have LeBron making 44 next year, Russ making 47 next year. That's the final year of both of their deals.
And then whatever AD makes.
And AD is extended through 24,
right,
25.
But I'm saying he's in the 30s, I think.
He's 35, 37, 40, 43 the next 4 years.
Okay. So
you're less concerned about him. I guess you're more concerned about what the length of the contracts and longevity for LeBron and Westbrook, and those guys are up after next season.
Yeah.
See, if AD, which he's capable of doing, which he did on that championship run, AD was AD. When they won it, AD was they won it because of AD. Yes, LeBron was great and LeBron was steady and healthy all year. But AD was the one that was a man among boys, especially when they went down to the bubble. And if he can be that guy and really take the reins as being the guy that to hand over or to receive the torch from LeBron, then you can handle LeBron not being LeBron from 5-10 years ago. You can handle LeBron, taking a little smaller role and allowing AD to really be the total focal point of this team.
Right. So after next year, LeBron should do the nice thing and just give the torch to AD and let the Lakers move on. Okay. Let's play a little Know Your Squad. Squad today is the Dodgers. 866-987-2570. So if you think you know the Dodgers, first caller. Kevin will pick you up, put you on the air. You're playing Rodney and Ronnie.
Now, your chance to put $1,000 in your pocket. Text the nationwide keyword BILLS to 200-200. You'll get a confirmation text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest. That's BILLS to 200-200. Good luck.
Thanks for joining us on your ride.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Speaking of which, traffic. And bringing you LA's best sports talk weekdays, noon to 3.
Rogan and Rodney.
Yeah. Go squad. Hey.
Oh, yeah. Look, it is a terrific Tuesday, Rodney Pete, Fred Rogan.
Exactly what they need for me, the first second they speak to me. I'm not with all the secrecy, secretly beefing me behind closed doors, but playing it.
How you doing, Fred?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm ready to go. Let's see if we get a winner here.
Rogan and Rodney Roulette. Know your squad.
Remember, you can help our community. We have partnered with the Justin Turner Foundation and Dream Center LA to raise money for our military veterans and help provide Thanksgiving meals, Christmas trees, and also gifts to families in need this holiday season. Go to dreamcenter.org/donate now. Complete details at am570lasports.com. Mike in Monrovia, you ready to go?
Born ready.
Okay. Here's the deal. It's Know Your Squad. And Know Your Squad, I'll give you five choices. If you answer before I've given you all five choices, you're locked out of that question. All right?
Yes.
Okay. Ronnie, you ready?
I'm ready to go, Fred.
Know your Dodgers. Which of these Dodger players struck out a team high 9 times in this year's NLCS series loss to Atlanta? Chris Taylor, Albert Pujols, Corey Seager, Trey Turner.
Chris Taylor.
Oh, oh.
Oh, boy.
Hold on. Hold on.
Oh, boy.
You know what that means.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Mike, you're locked out of this question.
Oh, no.
All right. Here are the choices for the two remaining players. Chris Taylor, Albert Pujols, Corey Seager, Trey Turner, or Trey Songz?
Trey Turner. Corey Seager.
Yep. Ronnie.
Damn it, Ronnie. You both, I swore it was Trey Turner.
I thought it was.
Trying to beat Ronnie to the punch.
Thought it was.
All right, Ronnie got it. Mike, you're back in. Let's go.
Ready.
Who holds the Dodger record for most triples with 110 career triples?
Ooh.
Let me go one more time.
Say it again, Fred.
Who holds the Los Angeles Dodger record for most career triples with 110? Duke Snyder, Willie Davis, Bill Russell, Maury Wills, or Maury Povich?
Maury Wills.
Maury Wills.
Bill Russell.
Willie Davis.
Duke Snyder.
Willie Davis is correct. Mike. Mike is on the board. Rodney, I got to say, you're missing, but you're coming with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yes, I am, Freddie.
Yeah, you're fired up.
I don't want to fall into the trap of yesterday where you don't think I answered in time, Freddie. I'm making it emphatic.
Yeah, yes. Yesterday was highly unusual. We actually had two ties, which meant both questions were thrown out and ultimately cost you.
Yes, it did, Fred.
Okay.
Yes, it did.
Who led the Dodgers with a .536 slugging percentage this past season? Max Muncy, Corey Seager, A.J. Pollock, Justin Turner, or Justin Bieber?
Max Muncy.
Corey Seager.
No good.
A.J. Pollock.
Justin Pollock.
Corey Seager.
Ronnie got it. Ronnie did get it. With A.J. Pollock, the answer... Justin Pollock was not accepted.
You heard that?
Yes, I did.
A.J. Pollock's a weapon.
Right. The weapon A.J. Pollock was the correct answer.
Not Justin Pollock. I try to hit two birds in one stone, Freddie.
Yeah, the man known as Justin Pollock did not work. Okay, here's the next one. Kirk Gibson led the Dodgers with 25 homers in the 1988 regular season, who was second on the team with 20 home runs that year. Franklin Stubbs, John Shelby, Mike Marshall, Pedro Guerrero, or Eddie Guerrero?
Mike Marshall. Marshall.
Oh, yes. Rodney, who do you think got that one?
I got that one.
Ronnie, who do you think got that one?
I think it's a tie. It sounded really, really close.
Mike and Monrovia, who do you think got that one?
Rodney.
Absolutely, I did. It wasn't even close.
Kevin, are you queuing it up? You ready? Let's go. Pedro Guerrero or Eddie Guerrero?
Mike Marshall.
Guerrero.
Mike Marshall. Marshall. Oh, yeah, that's me.
Kevin?
Clearly a tie.
Wow. Wow. Wow, Wes.
That's me, Kevin. Clearly a tie. Okay, it's a tie. Sorry, Rodney.
Clearly a tie?
Are you kidding me?
One more time. Do it again, Kevin. Pedro Guerrero or Eddie Guerrero?
Mike Marshall came first.
Kevin? I have a trouble hearing that. Maybe some help, Fred? Do you hear the same thing that I'm hearing, or do you hear Rodney first?
I think you should pick.
Well, you know, if Rodney wants
picking. I've given my opinion. I'm asking you what you're hearing, Fred.
Just give it to Rodney. I'll let you have it, Rodney.
You know what? I thought actually it was a tie. But Rodney,
oh, actually, you think so?
You know, since Rodney wants it so badly, just let him
have it. No. Fred and Kevin think it's a tie. It's a tie. I'm all.
But you don't really think that, though.
I don't think it was a tie, but if they know.
Exactly.
Here's whatever it was.
Mike, sir.
Sons of bitches. Yes,
I'd say that's fugazi.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, here's the next one. Who holds the Los Angeles Dodgers record for most earned runs allowed in a single season with 118? Okay. Hideo Nomo, Don Drysdale, Chan Ho Park, Don Sutton, or Darren Sutton?
Chan Ho Park.
Rodney, Don Sutton.
Did I get that one?
Yes, you did.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Well, who was he?
It was Don Sutton.
Then I got it. I beat Rodney on that one.
No, you did not, Mike.
Yes, I did.
No,
Mike. That sounded like a chorus.
No, well, Kevin, are we going to have to do it?
Sure. For Mike, I'll do it for you, Mike, just so we can approve.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, let's do it for Mike. Yeah, I think you got beat on that one. But Kevin will pull it up. Then we have one more question, and the game could go anybody's direction. Here we go. Listen.
Don Sutton.
Don Sutton.
There. You, Rodney.
Don Sutton.
Don Sutton.
Okay, you hear it?
That's a delay.
No, it's not a delay. It was not a delay. Rodney got it. But here's where we're at, Mike. This is it. If you get this, you will tie Ronnie. If Rodney gets this, he will tie Ronnie. If Ronnie gets it, he wins. Good luck to all. Which of these Dodger players did not win the NL Rookie of the Year Award? Steve Sachs, Raul Mondesi, Adrian Beltre, Rick Sutcliffe, or Rick James?
Rick Sutcliffe.
No good.
Raul Mondesi.
Adrian Beltre.
Raul Mondesi.
Rodney. No, Rodney.
Mondesi.
No, it's Rodney. He said Adrian Beltre. Correct.
Yeah. Yes. So, yes.
Rodney?
No. Yes. You never have.
You ended a tie with Ronnie. Congratulations to the two of you.
Never lost.
No, well, Mike, you kind of did. But
never lost.
That's okay. Mike, you battled.
Never lost.
We had a battle, Mike. We had a battle.
You battled all the way through, buddy.
All right. My ball boy from the University of Arizona, my Rodney P. friend. Have a good rest of the day.
Right on.
Okay, next hour, maybe we'll open the phone lines. And we'll ask the question, who really was worse last night, the Rams or the Lakers? Also coming up next hour, our buddy from the LA Times. Way in, Bill Plaschke.
PG-13, Eric Bledsoe with a big splash. Nick Batum, Isaiah Hornstein.
LA Clippers basketball is heard on their official home.
AM 570 LA Sports.
The rebuilding San Antonio Spurs come to LA to take on Paul George and the Clippers. Clipper Countdown kicks off at 6:30 right here after Petros and Money.
The home of the Clippers.
Thanks for joining us on your ride.
Thank you very much, yes.
Speaking of which, traffic. And now another Rogan and Rodney. Afternoon Delight.
If you say go, you know I will. And though this love has its flaws, we're forever outlaws. Messed around, but I forgave you.
Today.
What do they still want me to hate?
Afternoon Delight is Outlaws by Rick Ross. This song is set to appear on the Maybach Music Mogul's upcoming album entitled Richer Than I'd Ever Been, which will be released next month. The track features Jasmine Sullivan and 21 Savage. Talking about the project in a recent interview, he said, I feel this is my best album. I make progress every day. The words I use, the positions I'm in, the things I'm able to say, some of the stuff I'm saying on the album, I'll separate this album from others. again. Today's Afternoon Delight is Outlaws by Rick Ross. Featuring Jack Sullivan.
And now,
21-7.
From the court to the courtroom with Jacob M. Ronnie.
Okay, here he comes. Our weekly visit with... And Jacob, how are you today?
Good afternoon. How are you guys?
We're doing well. All right, Jacob, of course, a proud partner of the Lakers. So I guess we're blaming you. What do you have to say for yourself after that last night?
Whew. It's been a little tough to watch these games.
Wow.
I mean, I gotta tell you, you know.
Yeah. Tell it like it is, Jacob. Yeah. Tell it like it is.
Yeah, Jacob, you got to. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, you look at it and you keep saying, oh, it's just they're working through the kinks and they just got to get through, you know, a month or so or 2 months or so or after Christmas and they'll figure it out. They're kind of working through rotations. But as you look at them, Jacob, I mean, and you continue to look at them, they're not going to get younger. And it feels like some of the teams, a lot of the teams that they play, they're going up against teams that are more athletic, more energetic. And how do you fix that?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, we've been watching these teams that, you know, absolutely stink, and they come in and they beat them because, what, you got these younger teams, they're up for playing the Lakers, they're basically running circles around them. I think, you know, ultimately the number one thing is we got to make sure we get healthy. I mean, you know, this is not an excuse, it's a fact. You know, bringing THT back, the fact that, you know, he's back as he gets his legs under him, I think he's going to be a very, you know, welcome sight, not only to the fans, but also to the team, because he brings something that we're currently missing. You know, LeBron supposedly is supposed to be back on Friday against the Celtics. You know, obviously it's helpful to have your full team. It's helpful to have, you know, your stars. But I think as we've been watching, you know, they get up for the, you know, for the good teams. I mean, you know, I was at the Miami game and, you know, they played well and you had a lot of bench production. And then you look at the games that they've won, the bench performs. You look at the games that they, you know, they lose, the bench doesn't perform. And, you know, I think last night, you know, Wayne Ellington and one or two other people had, you know, 4 points. How are you going to win that game? You know, the frustration begins to set in. But I think, you know, this is the team you got. You got to go to the basics. You got to have the right, you know, you got to have the right five on the floor. And you just got to work hard. I mean, in the beginning, all we were doing was blaming Russell Westbrook. I mean, he's been one of the guys who's actually bringing you points. You know, you have Carmelo having good games and not so good games. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, this is the team we have. Everyone was concerned whether, you know, they're a little bit older. Obviously, they are. But, you know, it doesn't help to be injured. And I think, you know, we get the likes of Trevor Ariza back. He brings a lot on the defense. And if you look, the defense has been the biggest problem. I mean, we're giving up a lot of points to teams that are no good. And, you know, the likes of a Trevor Ariza, the likes of a THT, you know, with those long, you know, with the long wingspan. I mean, I think those will start to make a difference. But ultimately, they just got to play better basketball. And it's as simple as that.
Well, they've got to play better in the third quarter. What are they, minus 89 in the third quarter? It's like they don't show up or they come out and they're asleep.
You know, we're getting to a point, Fred, where you look at them and you watch and you see the score and you know they're up by 12, they're up by 15, and you don't even get excited about it because you know that in the fourth quarter, suddenly it's going to be a two-point game.
Yeah.
And then they have to gut it out. I mean, that should not happen. And, you know, AD's had some, you know, good games, but, you know, I have to tell you, AD is not going to be an alpha. I mean, last night they were triple-teaming him, and he could not, or the coaching staff couldn't, you know, come up with a way in order to get everybody else to score. So Chicago kept triple teaming him. He couldn't even get a shot off. So, you know, it's a lot of stuff that just has to hopefully get better. But, you know, the defense is number one, man. They always say, if you can keep them scoring less than you, you're going to win. And that's not what the Lakers are doing.
Jacob, our listeners love when you come on and share some information. Is California the only state, I think it is, that allows motorcyclists to split lanes and what is everybody's rights?
It's crazy, huh? Yeah, it is. It actually is. And it's interesting when, you know, you look and you ask questions in terms of why they're okay with that. They say because if you tell the motorcyclist to have to be in a lane, that means you're adding more to the traffic. And they're basically saying that if you put a motorcycle having to be right behind a vehicle, that means you're adding another car. It means more traffic. And they tried to set some rules to say, you know, you can only split lanes as long as you're, you know, you're in an area that you're riding below 40 miles an hour. But listen, the accidents are on the up. You end up looking at, you know, when people get injured in a motorcycle accident, a lot of times you don't see them coming from the left or the right. And for the motorcycle accident, they need the protection. So it's not a car issue or a motorcycle issue. It's, you know, this, you know, splitting lanes in California is legal. I think it's super dangerous. We have a lot of our clients who get injured that way. But, you know, I think every day they're looking at it. And I think that's why this conversation is coming up again. That's why, you know, the right people are looking at it to say, hey, does it make sense? I think, you know, I think it's absolutely dumb to say that, you know, if you put a motorcycle behind a car, tell them they can't split lane, you're going to have, you know, more traffic. Who cares if there's more traffic if you're safer out there? We already have enough traffic, you know, so we're seeing a lot of that right now. And I want to share that with our motorcycle riders is, you know, that obviously a lot of times I get a phone call and they say, well, did I do something wrong? No, you didn't do anything wrong. But you still have to be really, really careful because most people on a motorcycle, you know, are never going to win when they get hit by a 3,000-pound vehicle.
Exactly. And do they have a case? How often when they're hit and they call you, do they win the case?
Very often. Very often. And the reason they win it is because the California laws do protect them. But ultimately, you know, the injuries are bad. So even if you're coming in and we are helping them, they're going through a lot, and their injuries are usually very, very serious. So, yes, I do have to tell you that, you know, we do very well for our motorcycle clients because of the fact that, you know, their injuries are often very, very serious. And, you know, they're smart enough to call us immediately because we do have to go to the scene. We do have to take pictures. We do have to get video. We do have to get everything in order for them, you know, and their side of the story, you know, to be proven correctly.
All right. Well, Jacob, thanks for coming on.
Before I go, though, before you send me away, hold on, Fred.
Go.
This is the weekend. This is the weekend, Rodney. This is a Trojan versus UCLA weekend.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And I got my gear ready. And, you know, this is going to be my first USC game that I'm going this year. I do have to say that, you know, we're pretty pumped up. In my house, it's a house where it's me and my boys are all USC, and my wife went to UCLA. So I can't really say it's divided evenly. But, you know, as a Trojan fan, and I know, Rodney, you're there, we're excited, and we're hoping we're going to have a big game this weekend at the Coliseum.
Yep. I've been hearing from a lot of UCLA folks. You know, they come out of the woodwork when SC is down to kind of start talking, Jacob. So I've been hearing from a lot of them. So I am, too, excited for this weekend.
So, Jacob, you're going to be there, right?
I will be there, sir.
And, Rodney, you're going to be there, right?
I will be there, Freddie.
All right, so there'll be like, there, what, Fred? 6-7 people
from
USC there?
Don't you stop. Fred, don't you say that.
Been a tough year, Rodney. Been
a tough year. Fred, I think you
don't have to dig it in and turn it, Fred.
Sorry. All right, Jacob, have a good week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Same, guys. Take care.
Rogan and Rodney.
AM 570, LA Sports. All right, coming up this hour, we're going to open the phone lines. Who was worse? That'll be a fun game. Rams or Lakers? And why were they worse? Yeah, we'll do that later in the hour. And up next, our buddy from the LA Times, Bill Plaschke.